Hello, this is Brian again. Welcome to About Music, The Art of Listening. Today I'm going to repeat the program from episode 7. This is because, having now covered the basic musical forms, strophic, verse and chorus, binary, ternary, rondo, variation, sonata form, and rondo sonata form, by the way, did you realize we've come this far? There's an extremely important element which we covered previously that needs detailed looking at again. We're going to go from the macro structure of compositions to the micro structure, and especially to one very important aspect. This aspect is modulation to the dominant key. I did get feedback at the time that it was difficult to grasp, so we need additional work at it. Why is this even important? It's because this is the most common of all the key changes in music in all of the above forms, and it plays an important structural role in all of them. It is also an important part of the structure of fugues, which we still need to get to in future episodes. I really want you to master this art, which is a vital part of the art of listening. Modulation, which I can describe as changing the notes of the opening scale to the notes belonging to a different scale, has the dual benefits of creating variety and of creating a conflict situation that must lead to a resolution, so that the music can end back in the notes of the opening scale. I'm going to compare it to going out in the car and then parking the car to go for a walk in the forest. We start off walking in a place, and we can wander all over admiring this and that, but in the end we need to get back to the starting point so that we can collect our car and go home. We start at home in our home key. We drive our car, which is our music, to the edge of the forest, where we find the notes of the dominant scale waiting for us. Then we start wandering all over, admiring the dominant and maybe even lots of other scales, keys, trees and views. Eventually we return to the starting point, get into our home key car and drive home. We started today with an extremely well-known melody by Johann Sebastian Bach, his air on the G string. A little later on we will listen to it again and we will chat about it. In today's exploration of music, we're going to look at melody, also casually referred to as tunes. Melody is a fundamental concept in music composition and performance. It plays a significant role in conveying emotions to the listener. A melody is a group of notes which are played or sung one after the other, as opposed to at the same time. This is usually the most memorable and recognizable part of a piece of music. It is very seldom that a composition has only one melody. Usually there are many, and often there can be more than one at a time, perhaps one by the soloist and another in the accompaniment. In a song, it's the part that carries the words of the poetry or text or message. So let's talk about some characteristics of a melody. First of all, we have pitch. Melody uses a variety of notes, both low and high pitches, usually within the range of a voice. The contour of the melody creates its memorable line or character. It's usual that listeners can recognize a piece of music just from the sequence of notes, even when these are played out of their usual context. Melodies also have rhythm. They have a rhythmic structure which can vary from equal length notes, like in a hymn, to dance rhythms, syncopation, and other recognizable foot tapping shapes. Usually the melody will rely on other elements of accompaniment to make this rhythm convincing. The pitches that we have in melody have intervals. The intervals are the high and low pitches, and they usually remain within a familiar structure, which is also known as the key or the scale, for example, C major. These pitches all have unique relationships to each other, and we will explore these later on in further programs. Another characteristic of melody is repetition and variation. Melodies don't usually appear only once. In order to become memorable, they are repeated often within the composition. Sometimes they are repeated identically, sometimes with small changes, such as lower or higher.
Sometimes they are modified to convey a different character. We call this variation. Melodies are structured into phrases in the same way that sentences and paragraphs are in grammar and speech. Now, phrases and phrasing refers to the grouping of the notes within a melody. Phrasing can be thought of as the places where the singer or performer on a wind instrument would take a breath, or in the case of other instruments, where the listener would expect to hear a break in the melody to create the sensation of taking a breath. Phrases can be used to emphasize certain groups of notes. Without phrasing, the music would become stifling, like a speaker who never pauses while speaking and just rattles on and on as if they never need to take a breath. The way notes are connected or separated from each other is the primary element of phrasing, but the use of loudness and softness, that is to say intensity, is also important to the musical line. Here's an easy way to think of the concepts of melody and phrases. The pitches of the melody are the equivalent of the words used by a speaker. Sometimes these are the actual words of a poem to be set to music. Also, the inflections and the voice color that the speaker uses to make the words interesting and grab the attention of the listener. Think of a sports commentator, how the words and the voice go higher and higher and lower according to the excitement of the game. So the pitches are the words. Phrasing, on the other hand, relates to the pace or speed that the speaker chooses, such as fast for excitement or calm. And it also refers to commas, full stops, exclamation marks, question marks, punctuation marks that the speaker uses. Without both of these elements, the speech would become boring or confusing. The audience would no longer follow the speaker or pay attention. Similarly, in music, we need to communicate emotions and musical ideas to get the listener's attention. These can make a piece of music memorable. But if we don't communicate clearly, our listeners will simply regard us as background noise to be ignored. Have you noticed how, as I talk about melody and phrasing, I keep coming back to the four basic elements of musical notes: pitch, duration, timbre, and intensity? These four will pervade everything I say in future programs, so please become familiar with these basic elements. If you would like to revise them, the first six programs are available as podcasts on the website gsaradio.stream in the podcast section. Now to the music, to hear how this works in real terms. Let's start with O Holy Night in choral arrangement. Here it's relatively easy to hear the phrases because the singers need to regularly take breaths and the words are easy to understand. But notice the way in which other voices cover up the breathing points so that the whole seems to be without gaps in the sound.
Fall on your knees.
So now we're going to break it down further and look at an instrumental piece. Here is an easy movement from the Surprise Symphony of Haydn. I'm going to talk about it before we hear it, but first, let's just get the theme. You've got that? Okay, I'm going to play it back to you on the piano, and I'm going to count out the subsections of the phrases. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. Phrase. This small and unprepossessing theme has a multitude of interesting features. Let's look at some of them. First, in common with many compositions, the phrases are all of equal length and work out in fours, as you heard me counting. Next, the announcing phrase followed by a responsive or answering phrase. I placed these, as I pointed out in the example I played, but equally legitimately you might feel that the phrases are shorter and that where I had one longer phrase, there are two shorter phrases. Except for the end of the answering phrase, this entire melody is in C major, which is all white keys on the piano. In the place I just mentioned, the end of the answering phrase, there is a note that doesn't belong to C major. This note belongs to G major. It is F sharp. G is the fifth note of the C major scale, and the fifth note of any scale is such an important note that it is called the dominant. This change from the starting key to the dominant key at the end of a section of the music and then back again is found in virtually all music. The name for this is modulation. So the first half goes to C major, then to G major, and then back to C major. The second half, on the other hand, remains in C major. This little movement is in the form of a set of theme and variations, and typically of theme and variations, every section is repeated. So we have the theme and then it is repeated. At the end of the repeat, when you hear the very loud chord, the surprise, that is G major. Try to hear as we listen again how the music moves up five notes to G for that loud chord. Following on from this, we have four variations. The first starts with another loud chord. Every variation has the complete theme, usually hidden under some other notes, but if you listen for it, you will find it. Thank you. second variation is in a minor key. The third has repeated notes and is played by the oboe and flutes. Variation 4 starts out very grand for the full orchestra, and even the repeats are varied. Then there is a concluding section which sounds as if it might be another variation, but it is simply the ending. There is another very important point about the actual notes Haydn uses, but that's next week's topic. Let's listen. Thank you. Now, a work by Mozart, the Sonata in C, K545, first movement, which almost every piano student plays at some point, so it's very well known. It's also in C major, but the first part is much longer than the Haydn theme. As we listen to it, we find two very clear phrases. Then an extended passage of flowing scale notes up and down confuses our ear, and at the end of these we find ourselves five notes higher in G major, where the music stays until the usual repeat. In G major there are two more clear phrases, and then another extended passage of flowing notes up and down, but this time in chords instead of scales. After the repeat, Mozart rambles through many keys. You will hear how the music seems unable to settle in a key, but you will also hear that there are very clear phrases where the music breathes. Then it settles, and we are at the last section. This section is modified so that the piece ends in C major, the home key. But Mozart is not finished. We repeat the second half as well, just as Haydn did. Our second last piece for today is one where you get to work out the phrasing of the melody for yourself. It is All Things Bright and Beautiful. It's very easy because it's again a choral work in the style we all know, a style that is almost universal in popular music, verse and chorus. The chorus is the part that is repeated identically, and the verse has different words each time. The structure of this piece is identical to the Haydn. Each verse and each chorus has two longish phrases, or if you prefer, four short phrases. At the end of the first long phrase of the chorus, the key changes to five notes higher, in other words, to the dominant, just as the Haydn did, and then immediately back to the home key. To help you identify this, it happens on the word creatures, and remains five notes higher for great and small. The melody for the words in the answering phrase, "The Lord God made them all," is modified so that we stay in the home key. The verses have a similar structure, but here there is a very interesting feature. William Henry Monk, the composer, starts each verse in another key, but ends the verse in the dominant key. Now this is a lesson for us in the power of the dominant, because the end of the verse creates such an overwhelming sensation that the home key and the chorus must follow, and sure enough they do. In your mind as you listen, compare this sensation of expectation at the end of the melody of the verse to the sensation of completeness at the end of each chorus.
Each little
So we come back a full circle to our opening piece, Bach's Orchestral Suite. I would really like you to listen to the whole piece again, and I specifically want you to listen with new ears. The first time you just heard it, this time you will really hear it. Try to identify the following. First, the very, very long phrases that are almost breathless. Second, the melody in the bass. Third, the movement of the key from the home key up 5 notes to the dominant and immediately back to the home key at the repeat of the first part. This is about 50 seconds into the piece, but the giveaway is where the bass moves from single notes to a short melodic phrase in the bass, taking the dominant key back to the home key and then the customary repeat. At the end of the repeat, the bass's melodic phrase is not repeated because Bach doesn't want to immediately go back to the home key. Instead, he wants to digress into other keys with more long phrases. He does eventually get home, and you will spot this when he has a little trill in the melody, and then the whole second part is repeated.
Thank you.
In episode 1, I said that if you would like me to do so, I would enjoy being your guide to a deeper listening experience. And that if you're already a seasoned listener, possibly I may be allowed to give you gentle reminders of what it is that gives you so much pleasure. I hope that after today's episode, you have started to find that deeper listening experience in the pieces we just heard. From here, We will continue next week. Please join me then for more.